What's going on? What's crack-a-lackin', my peoples, how you doing? Welcome to the Shizow. I'm Jerry Quickly, and this is happening. Exactly what in the world is going on in the United States in terms of transportation systems, and more pointedly, what about the intersection of American racism and the U.S. transport system, and what is its history? Joining us today to discuss that is Robin Washington. He writes frequently about transportation and civil rights and was executive producer of the PBS documentary You Don't Have to Ride Jim Crow. His commentary from the Marshall Project is entitled Uneasy Riders Before United, A Legacy of Excessive Force in Transportation. I'm so happy he's joining us today on the show. Robin Washington, how are you? Welcome to This Is Happening.
Great to be here, Jerry.
So, Robin, we frequently fancy ourselves in this country a nation of just, lawful people who are, for the most part, nonviolent and respecting of each other's rights. How does that sentiment align with America's racist transportation history?
Well, as you noted, the title of my documentary is You Don't Have to Ride Jim Crow, and the reason somebody was saying you don't have to, because you did have to, and these were people who were challenging it. Jim Crow segregation was it's not just famously or infamously ever since the Civil War, but before that, segregation between the races and transportation goes back to really the beginning of this country. And, of course, you had segregation in churches and all kinds of things. So, unfortunately, as American as apple pie.
Now, Robin, one of the instances that you write about in your article talks at length about how the United Airlines Flight 3411 and Dr. Dow, who was violently yanked off that flight and bloodied and completely disoriented, that in fact there was another incident, not on United, but some 70 years earlier on the Savannah Special over the rails of North Carolina. And on April 5th, 1947, there was a train conductor named C.A. James who shot to death a black man named Fletcher Melvin for refusing to move from a whites-only car. Not entirely unlike the crew on United Airlines Flight 311, James, the conductor, the employee of Atlantic Coast Lines, was ostensibly doing his job when he shot to death Fletcher Melvin for refusing to move from a whites-only car. I definitely see a direct link and a connection between the violent, lethal behavior that took place on the trains for violating their made-up corporate rules, and what happened to Dr. Dow. Can you tell our audience a little bit about how you arrived at that connection and why you decided to share that story about Atlantic Coast train lines in context with the United Airlines violation?
Right, and that Savannah Special the terrible shooting death of Fletcher Melvin was top of mind to me, and it's one of the first things I thought of when I heard about the incident aboard United. That being said, I'll make a quick qualification. I am not at all suggesting that the motivation behind the way that Dr. Dow was dragged off the airplane by, it was actually Chicago Department of Aviation Security officers, that it was entirely or at all racially motivated. I don't know that. I can't get into their minds. I can't tell you what they were thinking or whatever. Dr. Dow was overheard, as reports have said, saying that he was profiled for removal from the plane because of his race. Again, I can't prove that one way or the other. I don't know.
But that's how racism works. Unless the racist admits to it, there's no proof. The proof that I see for Dr. Dow having been targeted racially is the fact that he was targeted, he was violently treated, and there's not a video that exists in the history of America showing a 69-year-old white man being dragged off a plane that way.
Well, and, you know, even if there is, the distinction you make is valid because the bottom line is if I am mistreated and dragged off a plane or whatever. Do I know it's happening because I am, by the way, I am black and Jewish? Is it because of one or both of those things? or is it because they just didn't like me? It doesn't make any difference. That's the point. You know, if something bad is happening to me, but that could be a factor, you know, we'll just say we have to work to improve that.
Certainly.
But,
Black and Jewish, wow.
Disclaimer all aside, we don't have to go there. The clear parallel is that the airline was in its rights to do that. They had this whole thing about, you know, if they overbook a flight or if they have a booked flight and they need seats or whatever, they're the ultimate determinator of who gets to be on that plane, and you're supposed to follow their rules. Similarly, and this is what most people don't know, in the Jim Crow days, the airplanes to a degree too, and that's a different story because it really hadn't manifested itself, but trains and buses had the right to move people and to take action in case the people didn't move, and there's a whole long history of that. Fletcher Melvin is obviously, you know, one of the worst cases because it results in a death, and in a lot of states, in several states, the conductors, the train personnel, even brakemen, whatever, you know, any train crew person, any bus driver, I know in Virginia, West Virginia, and again, there are other states I don't have off the top of my head, actually legally deputized them as police. So much so, and it was purely for the purpose of enforcing Jim Crow, so much so that they actually added the line in the law saying, and this person will be the ultimate determinator of the race of anyone in case it was in question. So not only could a bus driver tell you to move to the back, but could enforce it by powers of pursuit and arrest. It was different in different states, but, you know, if somebody passed a law saying you could do that, obviously they meant to do it.
Now, I want to remind our listeners, my guest is Robin Washington, and he frequently writes about transportation and civil rights and was executive producer of the PBS documentary, You Don't Have to Ride with Jim Crow. And he's got a really insightful commentary published today by the Marshall Project entitled Uneasy Riders Before United, A Legacy of Excessive Force in Transportation. You write in this article about how, in part, the incidents in United Airlines and the incident that happened, Mr. Fletcher, he's murdered for refusing to leave the whites-only car, that while they're haunting the similarities, they also help to point out and illustrate how the dual goals of transportation law enforcement are sometimes contradictory. And it's this right. Odd area of American jurisprudence errata. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, we think of a police person or a bus driver or whatever that, okay, this person is there to enforce our safety, you know, get us to where we're going safely. I mean, that's the whole point in transportation, right? I mean, I could figure out 1,000 different ways to get somewhere. The whole point is to get there safely and in one piece. And so you think of train and plane and bus crew members or people who will help there, flight attendants, that's what their job is. But they're also charged with enforcing rules of the carrier. And so if they conflict, usually, in fact, I really can't think of a case where they don't, the rule of the carrier is going to prevail over the rule of the individual. And so in the case of Dr. Dow, that's clearly illustrated. The rule of the carrier says they need that seat and the, you know, rights of the individual to get there safely. He wasn't even going to get there at all, let alone be safe as he's being dragged off the plane and his head banging against the seat. And, again, that's true in the Jim Crow era, very, very much so. There's all kinds of tales. It goes way, you know, it's way more widespread than the one Fletcher Melvin incident. I have other incidents I'll point out. But just as a general practice, and I'm sure many people are familiar, the least bit familiar with segregation in buses, know that blacks not only had to sit in the back, but in times if there was a double door or a back door, they'd have to pay their fare in the front, then go out and get in and board in the back door. Well, a lot of times the drivers would just take off, decide, the bus is full. The person's paid their fare, they can't even get on. So, again, you know, the interests of the transportation carrier rather than the individual. And before I forget, I do quickly want to point out Fletcher Melvin is a, you know, how could it get worse than killing somebody? Well, it doesn't. But it gets pretty bad with, this is after Fletcher Melvin. In March 1946, there was a returning GI named Isaac Woodard who was on the train going, again, from Georgia to North Carolina. On a bus. And he was told he was taking too long at the rest stop. Again, the rights of the carrier, right? And he was beaten, and his eyes were gouged out. Became quite a call celeb, but he was blind for the rest of his life. And so, I mean, there were, you know, much more than one incident.
Robin, I'm just stopped in my tracks by the story you just told of the American soldier who, taking a bus home from his base, was attacked for taking too long at a rest stop and had his eyes gouged out.
Right.
It's very difficult to just move past that. Like, it did, like, you know, you didn't just share this horrific component of American history. And one of the things that makes it so horrific is that it is, here we are 50, 60 years later, and something that horrific that happens in the wake of World War II is largely unknown and unremarkable because of the amount of violence being visited upon people of color in that period. It almost makes it difficult to accept the fullness of the brutality and violence, but not accepting the fullness of that brutality and violence is how we get here with Dr. Dao, a Vietnamese doctor, being dragged and beaten off of a plane. That, like, is there a path available where we have both access to a knowledge of history and a way to incorporate it into our current lives to make it meaningful and relevant? Is that, like, well, what can we do with this information other than just have it break our hearts?
Well, we can make the comparisons that I made, and you're exactly right. You have to know about that. So my documentary is out there. We can get copies to people. You can find it on the Facebook page. You don't. Facebook.com. Don't Ride Jim Crow, I think it is. But if you type in "You Don't Have to Ride Jim Crow" and you go to Facebook, you'll find it. But, yeah, I mean, this is August to, you know, education and remembering history. You know, the Isaac Woodard case was actually very big. Orson Welles had a whole program about it. He was used in all kinds of things, but all kinds of campaigns. But you have to remember, there were a lot of horrific cases before things started to change. Emmett Till was one of them, and maybe that was the breaking point. But even then, right, you know, things didn't change overnight by any means. It took another 20 years to get legalized segregation removed after Emmett Till. So, mostly removed, I would say, by the 70s. So, yeah, it does require every individual to be knowledgeable and to be vigilant. And if nothing else, maybe the little voice in your head, and this is, you know, for something all of us can do, is something you need to listen to when you just feel, whether you know the history or not, that something not right is happening. One thing struck me in the video of Dr. Dao, other than, you know, obviously the horror of it, the people screaming, you know, him crying and yelling, and them banging the head, and the expression on the face of the guy who's actually dragging him, like, oh, come on, it's no big deal. What really struck me is there is a man, and I'm sorry, I'll say white man, although I don't know, you know, I can't tell anybody's ethnicity by looking at him, right, on a video, but whatever. Guy sitting in front of him, just kind of minding his own business. Oh, like nothing in the world is happening. You know?
Yeah, they're coming to collect the Jews, but I have this newspaper article to finish reading on the park bench while they collect my Jewish neighbors.
Yeah, you know? And everybody on that plane, you know, should have known this is not right. You know, this is where you put your body into action. And by the way, I'm not saying I would have behaved. I don't know how I would behave because what you're dealing with is an abnormal situation. If you've ever been victim of a racial attack, your mind doesn't think of what you should be doing. You're thinking, you know,
survive.
Whatever. I mean, something's happening to me. But if you can get your mind together and act and simply say this is not right to the people who are yelling, stop it. You know, I commend them. I mean, I think they were standing up for rights. And whether they knew about Fletcher Melvin or Isaac Woodard or not, they certainly knew dragging this man, whatever color he was, for whatever reason, off of a plane down the aisle was not acceptable behavior.
Robin, I want to ask in closing, obviously the American transportation system is not a disembodied system that exists exclusively and independently of the landscape of American racism and white supremacy. The American transportation system, like all of our infrastructure, is firmly rooted in our political landscape. Given the changes that have happened over the last several decades with civil rights laws and legislation, the trends that have been afoot nationally, how has the transportation industry stacked up to the progressive changes and trends within American civil rights? Is the U.S. transportation industry lagging behind or in front of the continued normalization and expansion of people's civil rights?
It's actually a mixed bag. There were actually cases after the Irene Morgan decision in 1946. This is right after Isaac Woodard, by the way, that the Supreme Court found segregation in interstate transportation unconstitutional, but was not enforced. But there was a moment, like a day, in which the buses and train companies were actually saying, segregation in interstate transportation, we'll not enforce that. But the southern states said, no way, you're going to enforce it down here. So even if the companies wanted to do the right things, in some instances they weren't able to. The same thing happened later when the rulings against segregation in general and intrastate came down. Again, there was so much resistance. The companies, even if they wanted to, couldn't necessarily do it. So there's some cases that the companies were trying to do the right things. There's other cases where, you know, they were slower than what was happening politically. And there's also things that, unfortunately, endemically were happening in transportation, simply like transit lines within cities being mostly geared toward white communities as opposed to communities of color, mostly geared toward taking suburbanites and bringing them downtown, again, as opposed to serving communities of colors, particularly when jobs started going to the suburbs. That's slowly beginning to change now. I'm glad to see certain cities, addressing this. But, you know, you're talking 50 years since a lot of these instances, 70 years since Fletcher Melvin. So, it takes a while. And for it to really happen, it means that if you're sitting on that plane or bus or train and something is happening again, you need to stand up for what's right.
My guest for this segment has been Robin Washington. He writes frequently about transportation and civil rights. And Robin is also executive producer of the PBS documentary, You Don't Have to Ride Jim Crow. And if you want to know about U.S. history of racism in transportation, I urge you to get a copy of Robin's documentary. It's truly compelling. Robin Washington, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on This Is Happening.
Thank you, Jerry.
Could take a really short break, and we'll be right back.